They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, listening audience, adoring fans, to Magellan's at the Movies. I am Nathan Mogulyines, joined as always by my brother Elliot Mogulyines. Elliot, this past weekend was the big one. It was the one we all wait for. It was Oscars night. I believe you watched all 3 hours and 40 minutes of it. Give us your thoughts. Give us, you know, kind of your biggest impressions from the night, from the evening.
I thought it was all right. I liked Conan quite a bit. I thought he was pretty funny. Weren't any real surprises that I noticed, except maybe Zoe Saldana winning for Best Supporting Actress. But aside from that, Anora quickly established itself as the front runner and ran away with it.
Yeah. Is that it?
So, it wasn't the movies that I would have chosen for the most part. I was glad to see Dune Part 2 get some love in the technical categories. I didn't disagree with giving The Brutalist Best Cinematography. I was a little surprised that it won Best Music, but yeah, in general, it was the ceremony. It was fine. I really enjoyed every time I could see Ralph Fiennes, because he just looked like he was having the time of his life. Oh my gosh. I think he might have been drunk or something. Or I shouldn't say that. That's a little rude to speculate, but he was having fun, and I was glad to see it.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Conan did a very good job. Trying to watch it through Hulu was kind of a pain, so I ended up having to do some shenanigans in order to find a stream. So I missed the opening stuff. So I missed Kieran Culkin winning Best Supporting Actor, and I missed Conan's opening monologue. But I did go back and watch it. I thought it was very funny. He came out swinging on a lot of these, which I found very humorous. And, I think I've mentioned on the podcast before that I didn't hate Anora, but I'm not, like, a huge Anora head. I thought it was an alright movie. So, it wasn't the worst movie they could have given Best Picture to. It wasn't the best movie they could have given Best Picture to. Overall, the coolest award, to my mind, is the one that maybe it won't surprise you given my top five movies from last year, but Flo winning Best Animated Film was super cool. It's the first, like, true indie animated movie to win, which is really neat. The animated film category has kind of been dominated by Disney movies and Pixar movies for the entirety of its existence. So seeing it go to something that was made by like 10 people in Latvia. I also saw a picture of like a huge, like Latvia was really into the fact that Flo was winning. I saw a photo of like 1,000 some people waiting to like greet the Oscar, the production team when they got back to Latvia. They've put up a statue to the cat for it. It's really neat, I think. And it's a really fantastic movie. So I'm very excited at the fact that this might get more people to watch it. But overall, yeah, it was another kind of, going into the night, seemed like it could be exciting. Very quickly, like you said, it turned out to be an Anora sweep, with some other movies taking the most unsurprising wins that they possibly could. Here's a fun little fact for you. This one's free. Sean Baker becoming the first person ever to win four Oscars for the same movie, and the first person since Walt Disney to win four Oscars in the same night. Pretty impressive performance by Sean Baker. So that's a fun fact for you.
Yeah, that's great. Also, Adrian Brody had the longest acceptance speech in Oscars history, which is unfortunate because I don't think he said all that much.
I mean, again, I don't want to speculate, but it seemed to me like he was, like, processing some very deep emotions in the moment on stage. So, yeah, it was, his speech was kind of crazy. I don't... The Emilia Perez people who started singing.
Oh, man.
That was... that was the worst moment of the evening in my mind, because that... It wasn't even the song that they won for, but...
You know what it was about Adrian Brody? He was just really upset about Shrek's new look. And so he was like, oh, no, I can't.
Look, I'm not a huge fan of the Shrek movies. I've seen the first three, but that was only, like, last year. I saw the first three Shrek movies for the first time in my life. So I have no horse in this race. I don't really get what people's issue is. They changed the design slightly. I'm happy with that. I'd be frustrated if Shrek had a fully grown, like, adult to teenage daughter and he still looked exactly the same. I don't know how ogres age, but surely they change in, like, they change their looks a little bit as they age. So I don't understand everyone being so upset about this. I'm not, like, excited for the movie. Also, the movie doesn't come out until Christmas of next year. Like, this teaser is almost two full years ahead of the movie's release. That's insane. Why are they releasing it this early?
Well, I don't know. But in terms of the trailer itself, far more offensive to me than the animation update is the what's new with the kids these days TikTok thing on the mirror.
It's hip. It's trendy, dude. Shrek has always been trendy and with it.
I have no way of evaluating that.
Yeah, kind of silly. Anyway, I think that's pretty much it in terms of the banter section. I didn't ask you this before we started filming the episode, but Elliot, are you going to be going to Mickey 17 sometime this weekend?
Probably, yeah.
I'm excited for it. I've seen stuff that it needs to make an insane amount of an amount of money it has no chance of making in order to break even, which is upsetting to me because I like Bong Joon-ho, and like I've said, I'm always a fan when directors make, you know, original, well, not original movies, it's based on something, but make movies that aren't like a Marvel property or something like that. So I'm probably going to end up going to see it. We'll maybe end up discussing it next week. In, like, the banter right. section.
Not yeah,
in like
I understand.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, let's jump over to the review for today. Today, I picked the movie, so I'll give us a little rundown here. We're doing The Breakfast Club. If you are unaware of The Breakfast Club, then this is one of those movies you've undoubtedly seen either a direct parody of or a slight parody of. I'm pretty sure most, like, tons of coming-of-age movies have parodied or drawn from this template of The Breakfast Club because it's a pretty easy-to-emulate template. I think it's a pretty clever template. Well, not that clever, but, you know, it's neat. But if you're truly unaware of this, The Breakfast Club follows five high school students as they are forced to come in on a Saturday for 9 hours of detention, which is an insane amount of detention. I don't, like, I was homeschooled, so that's going to influence some of the things that I say in this review. I did not realize we had 9-hour detentions. That's a crazy amount of time to spend in detention. But anyway, they have to come in on Saturday, spend 9 hours in detention. They're five people from very different walks of life. I can't remember what exactly the cliches that the opening narration calls them, but I think it's the basket case, the criminal, the jock, the princess, the nerd, the brainiac, something like that. These are, you know, classic high school movie archetypes. And over the course of these 9 hours, they grow to learn a little bit about each other. They grow to understand the things that the other ones are going through. It's an 80s classic. We're going to be doing an episode on the 80s for our next special episode. So I thought, what better time to revisit this 80s classic? So, Elliot, I'm going to flip it over to you for, you know, your opening thoughts. What's your experience with this movie, and what are your first thoughts as we go into this review?
Well, this is the second time watching this movie. I know that I've seen it before because I knew what was going to happen, but that is, I don't remember anything about my first time watching it or what I thought about it. I just knew that maybe even I haven't seen it one time, and I just like read the plot summary or something. So I guess we'll say that this is effectively kind of my first time watching this. If I was being generous, I would say this movie's okay. If I was being realistic, I would say this movie's not great. Mm. A movie like this really lives or dies based on the strength of its characters. And I just was not feeling it, man. This is like an hour and a half. It's like the movie's an hour and a half long. And it's about an hour and 20 minutes of spending time with a bunch of people who hate each other. And then 10 minutes where they kind of just decide to come to terms. And also, I despised Bender. Mm. I think that Bender might actually be a future serial killer, barring some kind of major emotional intervention. So that was tough for me. I didn't think much of this movie. I do think that the last like 10 minutes are actually pretty good. And there's a scene between Vernon, the principal, and a custodian that I thought was quite good. So there's like, I can see there are elements of a great movie here, but as it is right now, I think that the movie really skimps out on the character development in favor of, yeah, just kind of character development by arbitrary fiat, by saying, okay, they're friends now. Mm-hmm. And also, I hate John Bender.
Well, I think I'm in kind of a similar boat to you. I think I'm a little warmer to the movie. I wouldn't call it I'm not gonna call it great. It's not fantastic, but I do think it's a solid movie, and like you said, I have different scenes that I like quite a bit from it, but I agree there's some really strong scenes in here. I have also only seen this twice. I believe you have seen it twice, because I'm pretty sure this was a movie that Dad made us watch, because this is one of our father's favorite movies for whatever reason.
That is so like him.
Well, I mean, I think we should also add this, that like he grew up, he wasn't in high school in the 80s, but he was either in high school in the 80s or like shortly out of high school in the 80s. So he had a different experience watching it from us, watching it once when we were in high school, but we were homeschooled and it was 30 some years removed from the time period the movie is depicting. But anyway, that's kind of my opening thoughts. Let's get this started with, I think maybe one of, let's get this started with the characters. I think we start with the characters a lot of the time, but this, like you said, we spend most of the movie with these five. So before we talk about the five high schoolers, I do want to briefly touch on Vernon, because he was one of my favorite parts of the movie. I thought he was one of the more interesting characters. A lot of the times when you have these high school movies, if you think of something like Ferris Bueller, the older people in the film exclusively appear in the movie as an antagonistic force, right? They're trying to catch the students, and I think Vernon could have been just that, that he's just like a jerk and he's trying to ruin the kid's Saturday because he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder. But that scene that you mentioned, and there's a couple of other scenes too, but that scene that you mentioned where he's down talking to the custodian adds a really different layer to the movie that I think is really interesting. And so I guess I wanted to start with Vernon, because do you see that elsewhere in the movies? Because I feel like there's a couple of scenes where, like, the scene where he's trying to, like, eat his lunch and his, like, coffee thing comes out. And I know it's there functionally for the plot because he has to go away to clean stuff up and that lets the kids get, like, escape from the library briefly. But it's also an interesting scene because, like, it really hammers home that he's just, like, some dude in a job. And he's trying to do the job as best he can. He's just got some issues that are making him go about it in a way that I don't think is fantastic. But what did you think of Vernon, the... I don't know if he's a principal or just a teacher or whatever, the person who's running detention for them.
Well, I didn't read anything into the coffee scene. That's just you, man.
Oh, man.
Or it might, maybe it's just me who doesn't see it. I agree that Vernon was also one of my favorite parts of the movie. And when I was thinking of other scenes that... illuminate his character, I wasn't thinking about the coffee. I was thinking about how in that scene, I like scenes where a character like Vernon is kind of dressed down, or not necessarily dressed down, but another character with maybe a little bit more insight can just cut right to the heart of them. And the custodian, that's what he's doing in this scene. He says, you took this job because you thought it would be fun and you would get summer vacations off. But then when you realized it was actually work, it all started to fall apart. And I was like, oh man, that's actually really interesting. And that, well, like you said, that adds a new layer to his character. And Vernon says, I don't care what these kids say about me, but we, the viewer, know that that is absolutely false, because multiple times in the movie, he says, I'm not going to let you make a fool out of me. Or he says to Bender, I'm not going to let you make me look bad in front of those other children. So he's like a megalomaniac in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But he's not just one-dimensionally so. I think that this one little scene between him and the custodian, Carl, is enough to make me reflect on him and think, like, yeah, there is more to these kinds of people, and that's kind of what the whole movie is about. Right, is about the unseen depth to people, not just the Breakfast Club, but now here with Vernon, that he's a person just like them, and I'm assuming that Carl is probably right, that he's not necessarily sympathetic, but he didn't set out, I think, to be a malevolent force. But he is poorly suited to the role of a teacher, because that involves a lot of, like, mentoring and dealing with people's fraught emotional states, and he's just not equipped to deal with that. He's an authoritarian. So I thought that Vernon was a very strong part of the movie, and his actor, whose name is Paul Gleason, I thought he did a great job.
Yeah. I also think he represents one of the more interesting facets of the movie. And again, this is how I interact with a lot of movies, is I compare them to similar movies and think about, like, what is this movie doing that's unique and different from these other ones? So to once again kind of contrast it with Ferris Bueller, which I didn't...
I don't think I've even seen Ferris Bueller.
Oh, it's an all right movie. I don't know. It's fun. But there's a reoccurring theme in this movie that I kind of resonated with in some way, that is somewhat represented by Vernon, but also represented by things the kids say. At one point, Allison says something about, I think one of the other characters says something about becoming their parents, like, oh, I'll never become their parents, which is kind of a classic kid thing to say. And Allison says, like, we can't help it. Like, you grow up and you lose whatever it was you had when you were young, and because, right, you become more responsible. And so this, and I think Vernon kind of represents that, right, that at some point he was a kid, and no one when they're a kid is like, man, I want to be the frumpy, grumpy rule follower who's keeping kids for 9 hours in detention on a Saturday. Like, no kid once, I mean, maybe some kids want to do that, but I think most kids don't want to do that. And so, I don't know, watching the movie was kind of weird, because I think I'm finally getting to an age where I see people younger than me doing things, and I do have a knee-jerk reaction of, like, oh, these stupid youths, like, man, I can't stand those kids skateboarding over there in the park making a ruckus, and, so it was just interesting for me to watch the movie and start to relate more to the older character than, like, the high schooler characters. Which doesn't really have much to do with the, like, quality of the film. It was weird for me to watch a coming-of-age high school hangout movie and be like, dang, that Vernon guy is going through some stuff. I hope he turns out okay.
Yeah, okay. I became a rule follower a long time ago.
Well,
I don't think I ever had a rebellious phase.
I don't think I ever did too, but I do think, I don't know. Anyway, but I think maybe now, speaking of your penchant for rule following, let's talk about the high schoolers. And maybe let's start with the one that you've already been most vocally against, and let's start with Bender. Elliot, what do you think of Bender as a character?
I think he might actually be a little bit dangerous. That highly descriptive monologue he gave to Claire about being felt up, that is deranged. That is the behavior of someone with a diagnosable psychiatric disorder. He's such an unrelentingly cruel and just a bad person. And he is also layered in that the movie explains that he comes from a dysfunctional home, which people like this often do. But I don't know, man. Like, I think that it seems like there's not much to him other than that cruelty. Like, even when they're running around the school when they're not supposed to, and if they get found by Vernon, they'll be in more trouble. And so he, like, sacrifices himself by breaking off from the group and making a lot of noise to draw Vernon off their trail. But when he does it, he looks right at Claire for a minute, and he says, like, to her, I'll be the only one he catches, or words to that effect. And so it seems like the movie is being very deliberate in telling us that he's just doing this to impress Claire, this girl that he's borderline sexually harassing. And so I was just like, man, screw this guy. He is on a path to become a dangerous, reprehensible person. Again, barring some kind of major intervention. And the movie just never managed to get me back on his side. Like, first impressions are very important when it comes to characters. And when the first impression of Bender is that horrific monologue he gives to Claire, the movie's meager attempts to humanize him after that, I was like, dang, like, yeah, that explains his actions, but doesn't excuse them. So, yeah, I was like, the whole time, and then when he ended up getting together with Claire, I was like, this is not going to end well. This is going to be bad.
I don't have as strong feelings about Bender as you do. I think, I'm not going to disagree, he seems like a bad human being. But I do think he reminded me of people I knew in high school. Like, I knew people who would do stuff like this, who would be, right, very clearly trying to do something to get people's attention, to get a rise out of people, to get people just sucked into an argument, or people sucked into, you know, a physical altercation, something like that. I agree that he is an unpleasant character to spend time with, but I don't think that really detracts from the movie that much for me, because I think it's a very realistic depiction of someone in high school. I think especially in the 80s, my sense is that people or young people have gotten maybe a little bit better about bullying and behavior such as this as the decades have gone on and on. So someone like Bender being around in the 80s seems very realistic to me, seems very believable to me. And yeah, I think my critique towards Bender, and maybe my critique towards a lot of these characters, is for as much as the movie is trying to say that there's something deeper behind the scenes with a lot of these people, and they can't be easily understood through cliches and stereotypes, for as much as the movie wants to say that, Bender really is just a stereotype. Like, some of the characters break out of it a little bit. I think Brian breaks out of being a stereotype a little bit. I think some of the things that Andrew does breaks him out of just being like a very basic stereotype. But Bender is not one of those characters. I feel like as soon as Bender started talking, I was like, yeah, he's had a tough home life, and that's why he's acting out, and he's, you know, not as tough as he's making it seem and all this. And then, right, what does the movie reveal? He's got a tough home life, and he's not as tough as he's trying to make it seem. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. My understanding of cliches and stereotypes, it very easily helped me understand this character. So that's kind of where my issue with Bender and with some of these other characters lies. It's not that they're unpleasant to be with. Most of the people in high school that I knew were unpleasant to be around. I was not happy when I was in high school, except around a very select few number of people. So it's not a huge issue that some of these characters are not fun to spend time with.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. Like, the movie is predicated on the idea that these characters should, you should come to, if not necessarily like these characters, be in some way rooting for them. And I wasn't. Mm. And like his whole thing at the end, I was like, why should I be happy about this? It's like the ending of Being John Malkovich. Why should I be happy about this? Why should I be happy for these characters?
Not every ending's a happy ending, Elliot. Sometimes it's
but
just
see,
an ending.
But the movie clearly is playing it as a happy ending.
Hmm. I mean, it's...
You think that a character pumping their fist in a freeze frame, you think that's supposed to be taken as melancholy?
I don't know. It's stick it to the man. They loved sticking it to the man in the 80s. The man was constantly being stuck to, so... Bender, you know, stick it to the man. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a happy ending, although not in the sense that I don't think any of these characters are necessarily better off than they were at the beginning of the day. Like you said, two pairs of them are in pretty much 100% doomed relationships. There's no way Bender and Claire is going anywhere positive and good. There's no way Andrew and Allison is going anywhere. My boy Brian, we haven't talked about Brian yet, but Brian was the one that I felt the most kinship with and who did the most things that I was like, I did stuff like that in high school. I still sometimes do stuff like that. Brian, he's the smart one. He did not start dating someone that he barely knows who he met in detention. That's clever of him. He's got a happy ending. He's got a bright future.
Okay, but we know that. But does the movie know that?
I don't know. The movie doesn't know anything.
All of the visual signposts here of the music from the opening credits being played again, the smiles, but nothing about this ending implies that we're supposed to be looking past the surface, ironically enough.
I don't know. That sounds like a skill issue. I always look past the surface, regardless of whether or not the movie wants me to.
But Nathan, that's because you're being too generous to the movie.
All right. Well, maybe let's talk about some of the other characters here. I don't want to spend all day talking about the ending of the film, but what did you think of some of the other characters?
I mean, I don't know. They're all right. It's just... they all hate each other, and the movie says that they're on better terms at the end, but I don't believe that. It's 'cause like, well, I think that Andrew is probably the best of the bunch.
Oh.
Because I think he has the clearest arc, the clearest and the most, like, compelling arc.
Mm.
Like, I don't really care about Claire struggling with whether or not to reveal that she's a virgin or not. That does nothing for me. But his whole thing of wanting to please his father and... just going along with what people say, that is, I think, of the arcs of the movie, that's the one that's the most present throughout the whole thing, rather than just kind of gestured to occasionally. And it's the one that has the closest thing to a resolution that... but even then, I would have to... do the movie a little bit of a favor, which, as we all know, I am not wont to do, and interpret him being with Claire as something, or not Claire, sorry, Allison, as some kind of show of independence or something, or striking out on his own. Although there's no reason to think that I would have to be charitable towards movies, and I will never be charitable towards movies.
Interesting.
But yeah, in terms of the other ones, I mean, Claire's fine, I guess. Allison is, I don't know, I feel like she kind of loses her individuality that her resolution of getting a makeover and starting to date Andrew, I was like, really? Because she I guess looks like everyone else, or she looks more normal, which seems to be kind of at odds with the rest of the movie. And then Brian, I liked Brian. I thought he was probably the funniest of the characters, which isn't to say that he's funny, but he is funnier than the other ones. But yeah, even he, his whole thing about, he doesn't really get any resolution, actually, now that I think about it, because he says, I can't be an F, and then there's a joke about him trying to commit suicide with a flare gun, and that's all, folks.
Well, I'd like to think that he maybe learned to not take his grades so seriously by spending time with some slackers.
Do you have any textual evidence for that?
No, I just would like to think that. I don't know, it seems believable to me. I don't know, textual evidence, dude. We're not looking at a crime scene here. okay. But anyway, I would kind of agree with your assessment of Allison. She's probably the weakest character in my mind. She spends like the first half of the movie not even talking to the other four of them, so her gradual kind of drawing out is decent, but it does cause her to have a very abbreviated character arc, if a character arc at all. And yeah, her, it seems like from reading other reviews, pretty much universally, people are like, she does not look better post-makeover. And yeah, she's now lost what made her unique and cool to begin with. Yeah, Andrew, I agree. I think Andrew is one of the better characters. I found his speech where he talks about why he's in detention and talking about imagining this other kid that he had bullied going home and having to tell his dad about that. I found that to be very affecting, very compelling, and I thought, just in general, his problem of older people, of trying to live up to a perceived notion of what he should be doing in high school, I found that very compelling. I certainly felt that in high school of, you know, am I doing what's cool? Am I doing what's expected? Am I doing the thing that, you know, 10 years from now I'll be able to tell people, like, oh, I did this sick thing in high school? Because you've got to have cool high school stories if you were in high school.
What?
See, Elliot, we had different experiences as youths. And then Claire, yeah, I think Claire's okay. She is, I think, speaking to a female audience that I am obviously not in as a male, so I can't really tell if her issues are very relatable, because they're not very relatable to me. And yeah. And then Brian was my favorite character. I loved Brian. Everything Brian did, I was like, man, I felt that, maybe not everything, but a lot of the things Brian did, I was like, man, I feel like I can just see right through this character. I mean, this is very similar to how I was in high school, that I was not cool enough to be with the cool kids, but every time the cool kids were like, hey, let's go, you know, talk to some other people, and they went around and talked to me, it was like, oh, sick, now the cool kids are talking to me, and so, like, I've got to involve myself in the conversation and, you know, say something funny or say something. And here's the thing, this is, again, I love Brian, because in his mind, the things that, like, let me involve myself in the conversation, so clearly not going to win him any points with these people. When they're talking about, like, clubs, and he chimes in like, hey, I'm in math club, like, dude, that is not gonna get you in. They're not gonna go, oh, sick, Brian, really, the math club, that's dope. I think it's the physics club, actually, is what he says. But yeah, I really liked Brian, and again, I'm dreaming that Brian just learns to take grades a little less seriously. And I would love if on Monday, Andrew and Claire said hi to Brian. That would have been awesome. That would have made me very happy to imagine that that happened. But yeah, I liked Brian quite a bit. And I also thought his actor did a really fantastic... I think all of the actors are decent, but I thought the guy who was playing Brian did a really, really good job. Anthony Michael Hall, if you're wanting the specific name.
Nathan, you need to... The movie needs to earn these things from you. You can't just give it to them, otherwise they'll walk all over you.
I'm just trying to have a good time. I don't know what your problem is.
Well, I'm just trying to have an excellent time. And I don't know. If I want to just make stuff up for myself to enjoy, I don't need to watch a movie at all. I can just, like, read about it online and then imagine what happens myself.
Well, I guess, you know, I would argue I'm not making stuff up. These are the things the movie caused me to think about and feel. So even if the movie didn't, even if I don't have a ton of textual evidence to say, like, yeah, this is definitively for sure what the movie is talking about, if the movie caused me to feel like, oh, I understand Brian, or I'm imagining, right, that Brian is doing this thing because he's doing something similar to what I've done in the past, and this is why I did it, like, I'd say the movie gets points for that. I wrote in my notes that I thought the dialogue was really fantastically realistic. I felt like the way the characters communicated with each other was very, very true to high schoolers communicating. At least in my experience.
Well, I don't know. I just think... I mean, if it works for you, that's fine. You can only, as what is basically our motto,
yeah,
you can only review your own experience of the movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was going to say, I do really like that last scene. And it's probably the scene where Claire is at her best, because I really liked how she said, there's a moment where Brian asks, or basically poses the question of, will we all be friends on Monday? Claire says, probably not. And that this is a source of extreme debate in the thing. But I really liked how Claire said, you don't know the kinds of people that Andy and I are friends with and the kinds of pressures that they put on us. Because that is an example of what the movie at its best, when it is giving... providing that evidence for the depth of people, that I think it would be easy for us as viewers to be like, oh, what a terrible person Claire is. But then that just that one line made me think, like, oh yeah, that's a good point, and that adds layers to her character. And I think that maybe, as I've been talking about this, I think that maybe that is the problem with Bender as a character, is that he is given, how can I put this? He is given, like, explanatory context, and the other characters are given motivational context or emotional context. Because I think Allison is actually a really good point of comparison, because she also is mean to people and does some stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think that she has a motivation to do these things that Bender doesn't. That she's kind of acting, Bender is reacting. Hmm. And that might not make any sense at all. I'm just saying that I feel like there's more to Brian and Andy and Allison and Claire than there is to Bender as a character, in the way that he's developed and the way that he is contextualized, especially in comparison to his peers. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think that's very true. Well, and I think it is partially that the other characters are a little more emotionally mature than Bender. That with Bender, we have to kind of interpret things he says as motivation. That him talking about his home life, we infer, right, he's not getting a lot of love. He's not getting a lot of, like, positive attention. So he's seeking attention through any outlet possible. The other characters explain exactly why they're doing what they're doing, right? Brian explains that his father has put a ton of pressure on him to excel at school, maybe not his father, but his parents, to, yeah, excel at school, to get good grades, and that, right, this has snowballed into the amount of stress that he is having about this F in shop class. Similarly, yeah, Claire and Andrew both talk about the influences of the people around them and how that's impacting their ability to do what they want or be as healthy as they want to be, right? That Andrew feels like he has to live up to his dad's notions of what he should do in high school and who he should be. Claire feels like her friends are trapping her into being a certain type of person that I don't think she necessarily wants to be. It seems, you know, she doesn't seem happy that she's not going to be friends with Brian, that she can't be a better person. But she's also saying, like, hey, I, you know, my friends would tar and feather me if I became friends with a nerd, a brainiac like Brian. And Bender doesn't ever get a scene like this. Bender never says, like, hey, guys, I'm kind of being a jerk because, you know, my dad puts out cigarettes on me. Like, he doesn't ever say that because I don't think he's quite at the same level of emotional maturity and self-awareness that the other characters have. I can't really remember if Allison has a scene where she explains things about herself, but she seems kind of funky anyway. So I think that's very true. I don't know if it's necessarily a pro or a con for the movie in my mind, because I think it's frustrating that Bender never gets a scene like this. I also think it's fairly realistic that I think it would be really unrealistic for Bender to say all of a sudden be like, hey guys, but I'm very aware of why I'm doing things psychologically. He doesn't seem like the kind of person who's capable of doing that at this stage in his life.
Well, I agree, but the truly unfair thing about fiction is that realism is not enough.
So true. Right?
That stupid things happen in real life. People get through things because of pure dumb luck in real life. The kind of dumb luck that if it were in a movie, we would say is bad writing. But mm-hmm. Yeah, realism is not enough for fiction. That's all you aspiring writers out there, go ahead and write that down.
Kind of a line. I feel like I've been too positive on this movie, so let me real quick hit some negatives on here. I think, firstly, the style of the movie has not aged phenomenally. There's a bunch of goofy sound effects at multiple points in this movie. I hate goofy sound effects. I don't like freeze frames. The movie ends on a freeze frame. I'm not a freeze frame guy. I think it's stupid. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a freeze frame that wasn't mocking the idea of freeze frames in a film. The music, I'm not a big 80s music person, so not huge on the music. I also think, while I do really like the scene where they're all sitting around in a circle talking about things, and I think it has some of the strongest emotional moments in the movie. Like I said, I really loved Andrew and Brian's kind of confession and things that they talked about. It does kind of feel like the scene has a couple double, like it feels like multiple times in the movie the characters are like, whoa, I understand more about you, and then like 20 minutes later they're like, whoa, I understand even more, that's crazy. And then the entire sequence after they finish with like the dancing and the music is very corny, very silly. I know Vernon's supposed to be, like, in the basement still talking to the janitor, but, like, how? How does he not hear this? How is he not back yet? Kind of ridiculous, in my opinion. Unbelievable. Realism is enough for movies in this case for me. And I think in general, like I've already said, some of the characters are just not as good as the other characters. Like Allison, it feels like I just have no grasp on her. I don't like where she ends up. Bender is unlikable. While he's realistically unlikable, you still do have to spend an hour and a half with someone you don't really like. So, I think there's quite a few structural, stylistic things that are keeping this movie from being really great in my eyes.
Well, for me, the tragedy of... here's another unfair thing. Or this... No, this is just a tragedy. The tragedy of that last scene is that I do like it. I think it's probably one of the best scenes of the movie. Maybe the best. Either that or the scene with Vernon and Carl. But to me, that represents a beginning rather than an end. But the movie has declared that that is the end of these characters' arcs. So now Claire is getting together with Bender. Why? Her stated position is that she hates him. And I know that teens are flighty and prone to mood swings and stuff, but... That might be realistic, but that's not enough for me in fiction, especially in this case, that he has been nothing but cruel to her this entire time, and now she goes into the closet to make out with him. And the same thing applies to Claire and Allison, that she just literally...
Andrew? Oh.
No, Claire. Allison.
Yeah, you do.
She literally just turns to her and decides to give her a makeover. Why? Why? The last time they were in this little confab that they were having, they were at each other's throats. So the movie has just decided that it's the end, so everyone has to make nice with each other. When I think that maybe if that scene had been closer to the beginning or even in the middle, and then we could have built from there... an actual peace or understanding amongst these characters, I would probably be giving this movie a different grade. But because just as they start to... Just as they start to go on a journey, the movie ends it. And I think that that's... I think that that's poor, low quality.
All right, well, I had another thought. Oh, I did find the movie not, like, incredibly funny, but the Claire having sushi for lunch, I thought that was very funny. That's a ridiculous thing to bring for lunch. And then the one time where Bender was, like, making fun of Brian, and Andrew's like, hey, don't call him that. You should, you know, don't you know his name? Like, standing up for him. And then he's like, yeah, what is your name? Like, Andrew doesn't even know his name. He's standing up for him, and he's still... I thought it was a neat, like, character moment, right? That Andrew's, like, barely better than Bender, if only in the sense that he's not bullying Brian. Also thought it was funny that he just had to ask Brian's name. I found that humorous. But anyway, those are my final thoughts. Elliot, are you ready to get into ratings here?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I also agree about the dialogue being very sharp, and very... It had a good sense of verisimilitude to it. Wasn't a lot of this movie ad-libbed?
It's always difficult to see what's ad-libbed or not. What's not. On IMDb, the trivia says the final scene where they're sitting in a circle talking to each other, that a lot of that was ad-libbed, that the actors were given the choice of inventing reasons for why their characters had ended up in detention. So I think some of that was ad-libbed. I don't know how much of the other stuff in the film, especially like at the beginning of the film, was ad-libbed, but I would imagine a fair amount of it, I guess. I don't know.
Well, anyway, I think that the dialogue is really strong, and it is, it's a large part of what's saving this movie from me, like, just out and out disliking it. because it is snappy and it's just, it's entertaining enough to kind of pull you through without being too unhappy about it. It's just the script, right, on a macro level that has problems with characterization and character development and stuff like that. But I agree with you that the performances are good and the dialogue is good.
All right, well, I feel like maybe my number isn't going to make a ton of sense, which maybe means this was a poor review on my end, because I feel like I got trailed off talking about other things that I found interesting about the movie, but I think it's a pretty good movie. I'm not a huge fan of it. I don't find it as revelatory and relatable as I think a lot of people do, which leads them to rate it higher. So, like I said, some of the characters aren't as good as the other characters. I don't like the ending. I don't like stylistic choices that the movie makes. But overall, I thought it was a pretty strong movie. I had a fun experience watching it. I'm going to give it a 7.1 out of 10.
Wow, that was a poor review from you, Nathan.
Hey.
That's a joke. I'm joking.
Don't make
See,
fun
there's
of me.
there's nothing more to me than just being grouchy. I want to like this movie. I wish I liked this movie, but the truth is that I don't. I think that it has a good idea at its heart about the depth to people, and in the moments where it shines through, it does it very well. But on the whole, I think that I didn't even talk about the humor. I didn't find it particularly funny. And the writing of the characters and just the way that the movie decides that they've ended and ended in some very poor places that I am quite certain the movie does think is a happy ending. I'm gonna have to give this movie a C minus.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you were gonna go D plus, but
well, this is one of those movies where it's really hard to choose between a grade plus or a grade above that minus. Hmm. But I think that, yeah, it is just entertaining enough from the dialogue and the performances and the moments where it is doing what it sets out to do to salvage it.
All right. Just a little bit. Well, let's get into recommendations. My recommendation came to me just in a glimmer of inspiration. I think it's a pretty fantastic recommendation. I'm going to recommend a very old movie in comparison to this movie. I'm going to recommend Rebel Without a Cause. And this is, I got to warn you before you watch this, that this is early Hollywood melodrama. So some of the things that happen in this movie, you might be going, what on earth? Why are people not reacting like I think they should react into this? But I think if you get past that, if you ignore that aspect of the movie that hasn't aged fantastically, I think this is another really interesting movie about the youth, the problems that the youth are facing, and just the constant difficulty that the youth has in interacting with the world and relating to the people who are above them in the world. James Dean, very famously, is playing a youth who just, he can't connect with his parents because they've got their own kind of stuff going on. Every scene with him and his family, I think, is just, like, fantastically written. If you loved the scenes in Anora where it was, like, obvious that Vanya's family is kind of falling apart at the seams, you will love the scenes in Rebel Without a Cause where the same things are happening. But it's a really interesting movie. I also think it's probably one of the earliest I saw some review saying that The Breakfast Club was the first movie to treat high schoolers like real people. That's insane. Please watch other movies. And I would say Rebel Without a Cause is probably one of the earliest movies to be talking about the youth or being a movie about the youth and the internal world of the youth. So I think if you really enjoyed The Breakfast Club, go even further back and see some of the ways that the youths have always had these issues, I guess.
All right. You've said the word youth too many times. Now it doesn't sound like a word.
Youth.
Youth. What is that? Latin?
Funny.
Probably. I haven't seen that, but dang, Looney Tunes show did a fantastic parody of the movie. Room for one more. Always.
Yes. Elliot, just to be clear, that does not happen in the... There's nothing even approaching that. There's no, like, teacher who's a mentor to them. So I don't think that's a parody of Rebel Without a Cause. I think that's just, like, a general, I don't know, amalgamation of parodies. But I did, as I watched Rebel Without a Cause, I kept thinking of, yeah, all of the scenes from Rebel Without a Glove.
Anyway... I've gone in a similar route. My pick is just about the modern youths. That's going to be eighth grade. This movie is, I think, a little bit more specific in terms of the type of character that it's addressing. Obviously, because this is a movie about, it has one main character, whereas The Breakfast Club is an ensemble. But this movie is also about the challenges of a modern American youth, right? Like, struggling to connect with a single parent, being shy in general, living in the age of social media, and all that that does to a person. Plus, it is extremely funny, and the main character is... very compelling, very likable, and very well acted. So I think if you like Breakfast Club, there's a pretty good chance you'll like Eighth Grade. I also think that if you like the fact that life is hard and full of disappointments, we'll probably get along just fine.
Wow. That's a great recommendation. That's so true. We did a review of Eighth Grade, actually.
Yes.
So if you watch the movie and want to know more of our specific thoughts on it, be sure to go and check that out. Also, if you've never heard of Eighth Grade, it is directed by Bo Burnham, who you might have heard of from his fame of being... He's dating some person that I should know of. But anyway. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast. We're going to be back next week. We're going to be continuing our journey through the decades and our journey through... disappointing each other with the movies that one of us loves and the other does not love. So we're going to be back with one of those episodes. We're going to be building the Magellans of the Movies top 10 films of the 80s that we've seen as of 2025. But we've been doing a ton of work on this. I don't know about you, Elliot, but I've watched like 30-some movies from the 80s since... our 90s episode, in an attempt to build as big a supply of films to take from as possible.
I haven't watched that many, but I have been doing my homework.
Nice, nice. So you know it's going to be good. It's going to be well-researched. It's going to be very comprehensive. So be sure to tune in. Then we hope you have a great week, and thank you for listening.